Before we go into God's Word and looking for the message, cabinets that look like me would not be nice cabinets, would they? I invite your attention this morning to Deuteronomy chapter 8. And while you're turning there, I'll say a few things that have already been alluded to. We are here this weekend because of a reunion that dates back to 1970s, 71, to the formation of the church at Whispering Pines and the earliest youth group that was there. And some things that Wes already alluded to, you know, that we're all getting older and growing that way. And as I look around at some of you young people, I can see your parents many years ago. Some of them that we thought at that time they were just the little kids. They have grown up and are also a part of that group, and now their children are in the youth. You know, and we look at things, we look at pictures, we look at time. We look back how time has flown so swiftly. And it's almost unbelievable when you look back at how fast time can fly. You know, when we're at a young stage in life, we buy a property, we buy a house or something like that. We look at a mortgage and it's 20 years or 25 years or 30 years out the road. That's going to take forever. But suddenly, it's past. Time is fleeting. And we think, you know, yeah, those of us who are old, we know we're getting closer to the end of life. Thank you. But on the way down here, my wife and I traveling, we stopped in Harrisonburg, Virginia at a little Caesar's to get a pizza. And we stopped for the night there as well. And a lady asked if we're traveling through. And I said, yes. And she said, well, be careful. There's a bad wreck out on I-81. And it was several hours earlier. And a student driver, only 16 years old, and a milk truck, tangled. And you don't tangle with big trucks like that and win. 16 years old, ushered into eternity. You know, we don't have time all the time to know when it's going to happen. A couple weeks ago, at home at an intersection that I drive through twice every day, to and from work, car coming from the west out toward the main highway. I don't know if husband and wife, if they were chatting about something or whatever, but he just right through the stop sign and into the side of a feed truck, and he and his wife were instantly gone. You know, we sort of think, well, you know, I'm only 59. I'm not even 60 yet. Some of us at the reunion are 60, those old people. But, you know, we don't have any promise of tomorrow. So young people, middle-aged people, older people as well, keep in mind that life is fleeting and it's eternity that's important. And all of life is preparation for eternity. I guess some people it takes longer to prepare. And God knows all about that. Deuteronomy chapter 8. By the way, these are one of those things that come with getting older too. All the commandments which I command thee this day shall ye observe to do, that ye may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell these 40 years. Thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness, thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. When thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, that he might prove thee to do thee good at thy latter end. And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day, ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall ye perish, because ye would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. God bless the reading of his word this morning. I'd like to think about with you this morning is, if I titled this message, it would be, Beware When It Goes Well. You know, we all work hard when prosperity, adversity is in our way. We work hard in adversity, hoping that we can achieve a sense of prosperity, that we can get to a place where things are going along fairly well. You know, we were talking last evening, someone asked Joe if he's busy in his shop, and he said he's caught up. He has nothing right now. And I said, you know, there's a big difference between being caught up and being out of work. And sometimes it feels good to get caught up, but to be caught up for too long means out of work. And that doesn't feel good. That gets kind of worrisome again. But God is speaking through Moses here to the children of Israel and reminding them of all of the things that he has done for them and the journeys that he brought them through the wilderness and why he did it. We read it to prove them, to see whether they would obey his commandments or not. And as I read this passage again this morning and just now thinking over it again as we read it together, I was challenged by this idea. You know, he says, their clothes didn't wax old, and neither did their foot swell these 40 years. And they didn't have places to go to get new shoes. And I wonder how many pairs of shoes most of us have. I hate buying shoes. I'll be frank to tell you. I hate buying shoes. I get a pair of shoes that fits and feels good. I'm satisfied with them for a long time. But I know people that have to have, you know, I mean, they don't know if they have to have them, but they do. Many, many pairs of shoes. I believe it was Imelda Marcos, the wife of the previous ruler or dictator of the Philippines years ago, that had 3,000 pairs of shoes. Now, just roughly rounding off a year to 300 days instead of 365, just to make it a little easier, that means she could wear one pair of shoes every day for 10 years before she'd get back to the original first pair, approximately, just to put it in sequence. How many of you ever heard of the man that's walking across the country? He's been walking for the last 40 couple years, carrying a small cross, telling the story of salvation. The truck driver where I work happened to meet him in New Holland, Pennsylvania, a week or two ago and chatted with him. And he's been wearing the same pair of shoes 25,000 miles, he calculates. Now, that's getting your money for a pair of shoes. These people did that as well. God said their foot didn't swell, their clothes didn't wax old, and all those kinds of things. And that's not really what I want to talk about this morning. What I want to think about and challenge you with, hopefully, is that we do not become so complacent when things go well that we forget God. And I want to think with you in three S's, if you're a person that likes to take notes and remember things, that God brought them to a place where they were settled in the land, and they were satisfied with the abundance, and they were sustained by the land. And I sort of thought about this through this weekend and going back to when we first moved down here, and also I happened to be reading a book of the history of Cold Springs from 69 to 95 and how things went in those first movings down here. You know, the first people moving down, they thought they were farmers. But farming doesn't go too well in this area. And over the years, there have been about 8 or 10 families that have tried dairy farming, and none of them are still milking cows. It's just kind of a tough row to hoe, unless you can set up irrigation and such things as that. Even with beef cows, you know, you got to be grateful for some rain that comes along so there's not so much hay to take care of and all of those kinds of things. But when we came down here, we found out that it was a little tougher to make a living than where we had come from. Jobs weren't just as plentiful. And so we learned new things and we developed into a new kind of people. Instead of being mostly farmers, we became mostly involved in some kind of a construction or industrial trade of some sort or another. And as I look around, I think you who still live here, by the way, let's just get something straight. I live on the wrong side of the Mason-Dixon. I know that. I'm well aware of that. I understand that in a week or two, Wesley's son is marrying a girl from Ohio and bringing her back down here. And somebody said, another Yankee rescued. Well, folks, the Civil War isn't over. I'm one of the last prisoners of war. I'm still on that side. A few years ago, Billy Stahl was up there for a wedding, and he said, Dave, he said, what are you doing up here in Pennsylvania? You're a Southerner. And I said, well, I guess it's like this, Billy. Some of us the Lord calls to a lifetime of service in a foreign land. So I'm over there, okay? But for those who have stayed and have found yourselves settled in the land, it looks like things have gone fairly well. You have businesses have thrived for the most part. You've done well. You know, as I look around and I see the cars in the lots and I see the houses that we live in or you live in, and it's kind of like these people were when they moved in to the promised land. And Moses told them, you know, after 40 years of wandering around in the wilderness, you're going to come into this promised land and you're going to move into great and godly cities. I'm sorry, goodly cities. Certainly not godly cities. Great and goodly cities. And you're going to move into houses full of good things that you didn't build. And you're going to get water from wells that you didn't dig. And you're going to reap from vineyards and olive trees that you didn't plant. All of them were there for the people of Israel to possess as they moved into the land. God was going to bring them in and settle them in the land. Simply theirs for the possession. And as Jerry mentioned in his testimony about his tapping on that thing, I figured surely from what he said yesterday, it must have been 14 times that he tapped it instead of 19, but be all that as it may. God does want us to hear, or he wants to hear from us, the things that we need in life. It's there for our possessions. God is giving them the land to make of them a great and mighty nation, which would one day bring the Messiah to earth. I think you and I need to understand as well. The things that God gives us, the possessions that we enjoy, The blessings that we experience are not necessarily only for our benefit. They're for the benefit of others. They're for the benefit of a world that needs to know the Savior. It's for the benefit of people that you interact with on a day-to-day basis. It's for the people who drive by in your community and see you and observe you. And your life had better be showing them something better than what a world out there has to offer. And pointing them to a relationship with God. That's why God was bringing them into this land to settle them where they were going to be, that they would one day bring the Messiah to earth. But now they're in the land and they are satisfied with the abundance. Are you satisfied this morning with the things you have? You know, we had plenty of good food to eat yesterday. And some of you, I think, are going to enjoy some of that today yet. And I'm sure even those who aren't, when you go to the home where you're going to eat lunch today, you're going to have plenty to eat. How many of God's children around the world today will go to bed hungry? Starving. God's children, mind you. And we have it so nice. And we can stay so focused on the good things that we have. And we forget that it's from God. We tend to be like the children of Israel. They said, or Moses was warning them, don't say, my power has gotten me this wealth. I worked hard to get this business up and going. That may all be true. But there are other people who have worked just as hard, who have put everything they had into a business effort, and they haven't been blessed the way you have, but yet somehow their life is a blessing to other people in many, many and different ways. So he said, when you're satisfied with the abundance, you've eaten and you are full, and you have built goodly houses, and commerce is flourishing. After you have lived on that subsistence diet of manna for so long, they had only enough, but not too much. You know, our country struggles today with an obesity problem. And it's one of the health issues of school-age children. And so we have to have directives coming down from the White House now, telling us what to put in our school lunches so that our children don't get so obese. Why don't we just give them a little more exercise? Why don't we get them outside and work or even play outside? It's funny, many of them who struggle with obesity have a quite well-developed finger system. You know, they can make gizmos beat and turn and twist and turn. And I'm sitting there going, how do you do that? Just like this. You know, I have a son that's 18. And we have a computer. And so sometimes I say, Derek, why doesn't this thing do what it's supposed to do? And I just want him to tell me. This is his typical reaction. That's the way you get it fixed. Just move over. I can do it quicker. Well, they had enough, but not too much. They had the manna for a day, not for tomorrow. Sometimes I think we would be better off in some ways if we had and learned to live with enough and not too much. If we learned the Arab proverb when it comes to eating, enough is a feast. Just think about that. Enough is a feast. Many of the world, children, people of the world, if they had only what we took on the first trip through a buffet line, would consider they had a feast. And we have so much. Moses is telling these children of Israel, when you get there, you're going to be satisfied and you're going to be full. Their body mass index would surely rise. Young people, yours will too. I looked around the group yesterday, and our body mass index has risen. We don't have the leanness that we once had. But the leanness would be replaced with comfort and ease. And instead of worrying about daily sustenance, they would have pantries and larders full. They would have granaries of store, and all would be well. The relaxation that they long awaited would finally be realized. They would move from being settled in the land to being satisfied to being sustained. Sustenance means it just continues on and on and on. And so, as they get into this land, Moses says, they're going to experience a land of brooks and water, fountains and depths. There would be springs there, a land of wheat and barley, cereal grains. After all of this labor and all of this travel and all of this travail, they would finally arrive where they could set it on cruise control and just keep on going. You know, we get that way in our spiritual lives, don't we? And that's the crux of what I really want to think about with you this morning. It's not just how much you have, or I have, or we have, but how much we can get satisfied and sustained and complacent in the things of God. And just sort of set it on cruise and keep and quit growing. So with all of that going for them, what could they possibly have to be concerned about? Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments. And I believe if we're honest, all of us will have to admit that it's much more difficult to maintain a continual, earnest attitude of gratitude when things are going well than when things are going a little tougher and we experience the occasional really good experience. Forget not the Lord thy God. Moses calls them to be aware of the ease of slipping into that self-satisfaction and forgetting that it was God who brought them to that place in the beginning. And to say, as I already alluded, my power and the might of my hand hath gotten me. Verse 18 says, thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. Back home where I work, one of the young men that works, a young man I say because he's younger than I am, he's probably in his 40s, works in the shop where I work. He's had some health issues. He's not physically as strong as he'd like to be, but he still works. He's able to work. He's able to provide for his family. But he's got a brother who is stricken with illness to the point that he can no longer work. And he's got seven relatively young children. And so the family and the church is digging in to meet their needs. We discussed this in our Sunday school class over here a little bit, and I know you did over here a little bit too, about this issue of life insurance, you know, and we can insure ourselves for everything. Somebody said we'd all be better off to buy disability insurance than life insurance. Because everybody's going to die. That statistics is one of one. Everybody's going to die. But some people are going to become disabled. Well, here's a little secret. You can't insure yourself against every possibility that may happen. But here's two young men, brothers. One of them's able to work, and one of them isn't. So who decides, who gives one power to work and earn wealth, and the other one doesn't? It's God. And God allows others of us to be able to work for a purpose. What does the Bible say back in the New Testament? Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him work with his hands that which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. So God has not given us the ability to accumulate wealth for the sake of accumulation, but that we may give to them that need. Remember, it is God that gives you the power to accumulate or to get wealth and to use them to his glory. I believe the applications are very fitting as we consider the history of Israel and what God has done for them to our lives today. God has brought us on a journey out of Egypt as well. You say you've never been to Egypt? Well, the Bible uses Egypt as a type of sin. So we've all found ourselves in Egypt. And if you have experienced a salvation through the saving grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, then you know what it is to move through the desert and come into the promised land and enjoy salvation in him. God has done these things that we might work with him and worship him and enjoy his benefits in our lives and share his benefits with other people. But never to the point that we get so complacent that we forget our God. He has done these things for us. He's tried our character, he's tested our strength, and he's brought us to where we are today. But we must understand and learn that every generation in its own time has its own battles to deal with, and never to forget God. Youth has their battles. Young people battle with issues of purity and morality and answers for the questions of life. The real vital questions of life. Not whether you can win a softball league championship. That doesn't matter. Who won the Super Bowl last year? Who can tell me that fast? Come on. Quick, quick.
Green Bay.
They did? See, he doesn't even know for sure. Who did? Was it Green Bay?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. You're right. I'm not stupid. But the point is, one person here knew, or he thought he knew, until I asked him, are you sure? How quick those things fly away. And they don't really matter. And yet we can get so wrapped up in those things. Young people, the real important questions of life are the questions that will guide you from here to eternity. Who is God? Who is God? Who is Jesus Christ? And your faith in this book is bombarded by the world around us. And people will try to make you look like a fool if you believe in Jesus Christ. And if you believe in God. And you believe that this world was created by God. And it'll come in such subtle ways. How old is this earth? Well, recently I saw a film where somebody was, and they were talking about the fact that the church is losing 80% of its young people before college age. And they're losing out because they're facing questions in very early days of school about God, through creation, through evolution, through an old earth idea, or a young earth creationist. And one young person said, I don't really think it's all that important. I mean, people who are mature Christians debate that question all the time, whether it's a young earth or an old earth, whether God used millions of years to create the world. He said it really doesn't matter if God created it anyhow. It does matter. It does matter. It matters tremendously. Because what it does is it erodes that little bit of faith. My Bible, the Bible that we all say we believe, says God spoke this world into existence. And the evening and the morning were the first day. It doesn't say the evening and the morning were the first eon or the first billion years. You see, if you start going down that road, it's a slippery slope. And there's no easy place to get off. So young people face those kinds of questions. And parents, those of us who have moved on into the older generation, we need to be alert. And we need to be teaching our children and grounding them solidly in the Word, that they know where they stand. And young people, you need to know where you stand. So that when that person you meet in town somewhere, and he says, "Do you really believe that's true? Why do you believe that? Why do you believe that Jesus is the only way? After all, there are many good, sincere Buddhists, and there are good, sincere Hindus, and there are good, sincere Muslims, and their way is okay too. And all roads lead to Washington, eventually. So all roads lead to glory. But Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." So our young people are facing those kinds of questions in a greater degree than we did when we were young. And we need to be alert to those kinds of things and help them in the road. Middle-aged people, they battle with materialism and sustenance and provision for the future. And if we don't have a big enough nest egg laid up when retirement comes, we're going to be in trouble. Well, how big is big? How much is enough? How do you know how big a retirement you're going to be? Those of us who are getting there, close. I mean, if I retire when I'm 65, do I have enough to last me until I'm 70? Because I might not live past 70. I might not even live 65. It might be a moot question. It might be something I don't even have to worry about. And people our age get all bent out of shape in all this economic discussions now because Social Security is going to go bankrupt. So what? Who owns it anyway? Who says, "I'll take care of you? The cattle on 1,000 hills are mine." God can sell a couple of them if He needs to. He knows how to take care of us. But we get this idea that we have to provide. I have to provide. You know, there's only one thing we can take with us. That's what we send ahead. And that's true when you're young, when you're middle-aged, and when you get older. And then sometimes in the older ages, we also have to battle with complacency. The idea that we have arrived and we have a smug attitude that we did it on our own, or that we can now relax and coast on in and we will be sustained by the land we now own. We rest on our laurels. We get satisfied in our systems. And because we've always done it this way, that's the best way to do it. Not necessarily so. Because we've never done it this way before doesn't mean that's not a good way. But it doesn't automatically mean it is a good way either. We need to try things in the light of God's Word. And we need to live anchored on that. All of us must learn in life that whether we're young or somewhere in the middle or we're well along on the journey, we need to walk constantly with our God, and never forget that it is Him and He that has brought us on life's way. Beware when it goes well. Beware when you think you're coasting. Beware when you feel satisfied, physically, materially, but even more so spiritually. Keep an arm up, keep alert to what's going on around us. We're living, I believe, in the latter days. And there's so much pressure in so many ways to cave in. But then there's also the pressure just to get so enamored or so busy with the things of life that we forget about the things that really do matter. You know, I've participated in a number of funerals over the years. And I suppose all else being equal, we'll be doing more of them in the future. And somehow it seems that whenever somebody dies, automatically we think about them being up there in heaven and looking down on us and enjoying all the good things. and almost to the idea that the only thing you have to do to get to heaven is die. Folks, that's not true. You have to walk with Jesus. You have to know that it is Him who is the way, the truth, and the life. Walk with Him. Live with Him. Be settled in His land. Be satisfied with His abundance. And be sustained by His grace. God bless you as you serve Him in this community.